Outside Health and Fitness Podcast, episode 128. British cycling and world champion, Brian Steele.
I think it's like any sport, really, in any fitness. If you don't do it right, it's a horrible experience. But if you do it right, it's a fantastic experience.
Welcome to the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. We're getting outside the box, outside our comfort zone, and outside and in shape. If you're bored with the same old fitness routine at the gym and you're ready to try something new, then this is the show for you. We're exploring new and fun ways to get fit on the trail, on the water, on the slopes, and outside.
Hi, this is Steve Stearns from Outside Health and Fitness, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. If you're new to the show, we like to stay fit and active by having fun outside. We like to ride, slide, run, walk, hike, bike, golf, crawl, swim, and ski. If it's fun outside and it keeps us healthy, we love it. So if you're like us and you like to have fun outside, then you found the right place. What would it be like to have a professional athlete as a coach? And not just any athlete, what about an Olympic champion? Well, I'm honored today to have world champion and Olympic medalist Brian Steele on the show. Brian won a bronze medal at the 2000 Olympic Games in Sydney and a silver in the 2004 Games in Athens. Though Brian's retired now, he is still involved in cycling and helps others experience the thrill and health benefits of riding bikes. I think you're really going to enjoy what Brian shares on the show today, so let's get right into it.
OutsideHealthAndFitness.com.
Brian, welcome to Outside Health and Fitness. It's really exciting to have you on the show.
It's great to be on the show, and it's great to be talking all the way over from the UK.
Yeah, we're making a transatlantic connection this morning.
Yeah.
Early for me and early for you too, I suppose.
It's not that early. My daughter's 9 and I had to just drop her off at school and stuff. So it's a lot earlier for you than me.
So can you give us a little background on you? I know you're a cyclist and a very accomplished cyclist. If you can kind of give us a background, that would be great.
I started cycling at the age of 14. I wasn't a very good sportsman at all, really. And really loved the sport. By 17, I'd left school and I was on the national team. 21, I went to my first Olympic Games, which was Barcelona, where I got fifth place. And then I went to the following three Olympic Games. I went to Atlanta. Wasn't very successful for the whole GB team. Then on to Sydney in 2000, where I won my Olympic bronze medal. And my last Olympic Games was in Athens in 2004, where I won my Olympic silver medal. All for the team pursuit, which is the four-man discipline around the velodrome. And in the between, I competed in 14 world championships, winning 5 world championship medals.
That's amazing. That's great. That's awesome.
You don't think about it that much until you say it. You think, oh my God, I was good.
Yeah. That's a lot of accomplishment for sure. And I love your final Olympics was in Athens. How great is that?
It was good. It's nice to be the home of the Olympic Games. And I think I was very lucky because I had an Olympic Games at where it all starts and stuff, which was very special. But I was also able to win a medal at the first Olympic Games of the 21st century as well. So, I feel highly honoured about that. And, yeah, it's very special in Athens at the home of everything. When you're in the Olympic bubble and the Olympic, everything goes round, you don't think about that. But I did a talk on Wednesday and you pull out an Olympic medal and it's got the Parthenon and stuff on it. And it feels quite special.
You're still very involved in cycling. What sort of things are you doing now?
At the moment, it's funny, I've been retired now 10 years. And actually, Dave Brailsford gave me probably the best advice that you could get given was just to get away from the sport. So I didn't actually touch a bike for about 6 years, and then over the last 4 years been getting back into the sport, doing a lot of coaching in the UK in the moment, and I think the US is exactly the same. So cycling's on a bit of a crest of the wave with the success we've had.
Yeah.
So mainly been working with companies and working with businesses and charities to, I think it's like any sport really in any fitness, if you don't do it right, it's a horrible experience, but if you do it right, it's a fantastic experience. So we'd be going into companies and with groups and working with them to make sure they have a good experience and make sure they have a long-term relationship with sport.
That's awesome.
Cycling is quite unique for two things, really. One, it's very low impact. So You know, if you've been running or playing football from your early teens and getting to your mid-30s, you can't do it anymore because of injuries and stuff, where cycling you can. And the second thing is what people are finding, what we're finding, is cycling is very sociable. It's about the only sport you can do and chat at the same time.
Yeah.
So we're trying to bring those two elements into it. And we deliver some group rides where it's sort of business on a bike, really. We dream what is business on a bike. So people go out, businessmen. They can set up nice, we have a nice ride out, but more importantly, people are able to meet each other and have a chat.
Do you have people that, have you ever run into somebody that just really hasn't been on a bike since they were a kid, and you kind of get them back on there? What is that like? Have you run into that before?
We do a lot of that work. Prime example is actually my business partner now. He approached me about 18 months ago, and he had this crazy idea of riding 240 miles in 24 hours. It was just quite, there's lots of connections and stuff there, which is quite a long story. But he just said, look, not ridden a bike since I was 15. He's 40 now. Can I do it? And he says, I've given myself 8 months of training. Can you help me? So I did. I was panicking like mad because I was trying to then look him on social media thinking if he's 36 stone, then we've got no chance. But he wasn't. But his level of sport was playing golf once a week, to be honest. Yeah, we did it. We actually did it virtually a year ago next Sunday. We rode 240 miles. He did it in 18 hours in total, 13 hours of riding time. And this is really when we set up our cycling groups together, because he said, look, I've loved what I've done. You know, it's a huge achievement, but I want to carry on. Yeah. So, yeah, we set up the group rides together as a separate business. So we could, yeah, he could carry on, but more importantly, he'd fall in love with the sport. So, and I could probably tell you over the last 3 years about 10, 15, 20 stories about that, the same sort of people going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a stage in life. I realise that I'm not that fit and I want to get into the sport. And it's really good at the moment.
Can you talk a little bit about, you said some of the best advice you ever got there was to kind of take a break and not touch the bike. And I'm amazed that you didn't even touch a bike for 6 years. What was the benefit of that for you?
I think to get away, to be quite honest, sort of, as I said, Dave Brailsford gave me that advice, and it would have been very easy. Me, you know, you got to appreciate that I'd never worked properly in my life, and I was 35. Didn't really have the money behind me to sort of have much time off and think about things. And actually, Kelly Holmes, she runs the Kelly Holmes Trust in the UK. She runs a charity to help somebody like myself. To be honest, British Cycling, I carried on working a year with the coaches about a detraining program to make sure I didn't get long-term health issues. And started with, obviously, did it with cycling, and I just didn't enjoy it. I wasn't enjoying it. It was became a bit of a bind, really. Also, within 18 months, we had a family as well. And it's just one of those things where I started running to keep fit. And enjoyed the running more than anything, really. I've run a couple of half marathons since I retired. But it was when I got back on my bike, I think having that break made me just think, oh, I got back to the reasons why I was cycling originally when I was 17, the love of the sport, you know, and yeah, just started enjoying it again. I think that break was really good.
That's great.
And yeah, become unfit and not, yeah, I can still pull it out now and again, but not that often nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just to kind of reconnect, like I said, with the things that you loved about the sport. It kind of had become almost more of a job for you at that point.
It was really British Cycling. So I could talk a long time about what we did, but we actually set it up as a business. The World Class Performance Plan within cycling is a business, and it's valued on Olympic medals every 4 years. And it had turned into a job. I couldn't believe how many times my coach said, you know, just get your job done. And we did a lot of work of what's everybody's job within the team and stuff.
Yeah.
So to be honest, it had turned into a job, something I was being paid for and paid well, and knowing at the end of the day, you know, Olympic medal is very special. So, and just being so driven and determined, I remember when I first retired, I went for a ride in a road I probably rode out on probably at least 2-3 times a week. And I rode long, sort of suddenly started looking at the countryside and realised I'd built a housing estate, you know, and I'd never noticed. I know they'd done some building work there, but I didn't know there was like 50 houses built and people living in them.
Wow.
So that's how driven and determined I was, really. And that really was just nice to say, actually, yeah, let's get away for a bit, you know, get out of that pigeonhole and days where you was get out of the pigeonhole and become an Olympic cyclist, become an Olympic medalist, and you can always come back. And I would definitely say that was probably the best advice I've ever been given.
When you work with someone, or if there's somebody listening to the show now that's kind of a weekend warrior, go out, ride your bike, maybe somebody wants to either increase their distance or something like that, what sort of advice would you give someone? How do you do your coaching for people?
We do various levels of coaching. Usually we kick that off with a ride with the people so we can actually see there's some sort of basics what people don't do. So we go through that. For example, we always make sure the person sat on the bike relaxed and comfortable and they're set up correctly. I'm not a big believer of, you know, these bike fits and stuff, because they do it by numbers, and nine times out of ten doesn't really work for the athlete, to be honest.
Right.
We sort that out, make sure they're pedaling. I always call pedaling with their legs, not pedaling with their arms. They're not pulling on their arms the whole time and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then working on their pedaling stroke, their technique and stuff, really. And then I think one big thing, there's two things we get with our males and our females. Our males will just go, oh, I could ride 100 miles when I was 16 and try and do that again. And obviously when they're 16, they couldn't do it. So when they're 40, I definitely can't do it. So it's holding those guys back to make sure they build up nice and steadily and do it at the right speed. And then our females are quite the opposite, really. Haven't really got that confidence. So it's about generating their confidence, you know, going out with them. I've got a lady I work with. She's about 45 and she's undergoing a big challenge, cycling challenge late this year. So it's working with her, just gradually stepping it up, you know. Great thing again with cycling, actually out this afternoon with a client, is you can start chatting to people and they get distracted, and, you know, when they've not done more than 2 hours, you start chatting, and before you know it, you've done 3 and 4 sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's just really working with people. You know, we work with a lot with young athletes, but businessmen as well. So it's no good me saying to them, well, every day you've got to go and do 4 or 5 hours, when it doesn't fit in with their, you know, family and work lifestyle as well. So we mainly work with individuals to fit that in, what best suits them, and so they're able to achieve their goals.
Can you talk about maybe a big challenge that you faced, you took something away from, that you learned from?
We made a big key change from Atlanta on to Sydney, and this is a lot of work, not only in cycling, but I do in sport and the business and the educational work I do, is to work with people on their level. My first 2 Olympics, it was very much what we talked about as a telling culture, which I class as coaching, is I tell, you know, do this, do that, do the other. And right. The athlete or the young person just goes away and does it with no questioning about it, really. Hopefully you can appreciate that, you know, in the middle of my endurance phase, I was doing 6-7 hours on my own in February. I don't know about guys in the US, but February in England is not very nice.
No, it's not very nice here either.
Yeah. So it was a case of, you know, in that culture, you're just thinking, well, what am I doing this for? And, well, coaches told me to. And very quickly, you know, you can start losing your way a little bit. Well, the big key change we made with British Cycling was to move that telling culture in an asking culture. And I do a lot of mentoring across those 3 sectors. And that's all I always say is mentoring is just asking, well, what do you want to work on? How are you going to do that? What do you think we should do together? And I would say that's basically that approach for 2000, won as the Olympic medal. It's just about with that coaching culture, the athlete, well, the coach was just giving every athlete the same training. But once you move over to that asking culture, it's a lot more work. But then every athlete's working differently. Every athlete's working individually and obviously improving their strengths, but also developing their weaknesses at the same time. So I would say that was the big thing, and that's really what I do with the athletes we work with, is working them on their level, working them individually, but more importantly, being creating this asking culture. What do you think you need to work on? How do you think you should work that? People may say that's a bit more advisory and stuff, really, but we've found it, well, definitely with the British team has been a massive impact, and the riders who I work with is a big impact as well. Because then the rider takes a responsibility.
Right.
By that, they are able to, yeah, have a higher knowledge and a higher understanding of, you know, in February they're doing 7 hours. They know why they're doing it for, what they're doing it for. And more importantly, they will do it because they've said they're going to do it.
Yeah. So they have some real personal buy-in with regard to what the plan is at that point.
Yeah. And every all the plans we set, we usually we work on our plans. We work on 3 weeks microcycles and stuff. But every one of those is signed off by the athlete. Everyone is okay by the athlete. It's not a case of do this, do that. It's a case of what do you think we should do? I think we should do this. What about this? And by that, the athlete moves forward a lot.
What about some of the other people that you've helped through cycling in terms of just improving their health? Have you have any inspirational stories of someone that has come to you and said, you know, I've been kind of sitting around for the past 10 or 15 years and I really need to improve my health. Can you help me?
Yeah, we had a good example last year. We worked with a lady, actually a Spanish lady, but I have an honorary degree from my home city, University of Nottingham. Yeah. And every year they do the Vice Chancellor does a 2 week cycling challenge. Last year they did it. They went to all four corners of the country. So it's over 2 weeks, a 3,000 mile challenge.
Wow.
I worked as a consultant on the program, and obviously some guys are quite experienced. This lady came along; she'd not ridden a bike since she was 12, and she'd had a breast cancer scare the year before. And she said she was 55, and in a way, it was the last opportunity to do something like this. Mm-hmm. We did our first session in January. We actually did it around the Olympic Park in London, and she struggled to do an hour, to be quite honest. And we built her up and built her up, and again worked at her pace and her level, and built up and built up. I must admit, I had a tear in my eye when she crossed the finishing line in September when she had completed the 3,000 miles, which was amazing, amazing challenge for her. And her target was not to get off and walk less than 10 times. And I think the big thing about that, she actually she got off and walked 4 times in the 2 weeks. She did admit she sweared to herself every second of the day. But I think that was inspiring, and just somebody with that determination. But again, it was working with her at her level, making sure she had the right bike, the right equipment, the right nutritional level, and building that up from 1 hour January and then September, able to do 3,000 miles in that period of time was inspiring for me, if nothing else. And in the knowledge that I've helped to do that, it's probably on the level of winning one of my Olympic medals, to be quite honest.
Jeez, I would think so. That is amazing that she was able to accomplish that in just, you said it was just 8 months. You started
eight
with her
months.
In January.
Yeah.
Wow.
And obviously she had her ups and downs. She had her bad times, her good times. But again, we worked with her at her level. We worked with her so she was able to achieve that challenge. And that's our whole philosophy, really, with some of the companies we work with is, you know, people sign up to a multi-day challenge. Our aim is for them is to cross the line saying, yes, that was a massive challenge. I really pushed my boundaries. But more importantly, we don't want that person picking up the bike and throwing it in the ditch. And nobody's done that to me yet. I'm sure there's going to be a day. Well, that's what we aim to do. And we do our what we call our Sunday group rides now. And that's really just so people are just want what now. So we've developed that. It's all those people of those what's now can actually say, well, actually, I can meet up and share the same stories with people on a Sunday.
That's awesome. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you or follow you, get some coaching from you, how would we find you online?
Facebook and Twitter, which is just Brian Steele. Key thing on Twitter is at Brian Steele. It's a Brian with a Y, so it's BRYAN. Underline Steele, STEELL. People can contact me through my website, which is briansteele.co.uk. We're about to launch our Sunday rides. We're looking to expand these into different areas over the next 18 months. The website's not up and running, but we have a holding page at the moment, which is called Ride with Bob, which Bob is a fictional character that we take you on a ride and stuff, which we quite like. Bob stands for Brian on a bike.
That's great.
So we're launching this, and this is our weekend rides, and we have our Bob leaders. So we have 8 trained Bob leaders locally where they'll be delivering it, and you can once the website gets launched in mid-July, you can train with Bob, you can feed with Bob, you can do your maintenance with Bob and those sorts of things.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So we're really excited about that. But if people want to contact me through my website, or Twitter or Facebook, again, it's just Brian Steele. And again, if we are coaching, we can do that remotely as well. We have guys, we have two guys we coach in Australia from the UK. We have guys all over the country, up in Scotland. We coach a few guys and stuff. Anybody wants any tips and advice, and please get in contact with me.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. I was going to ask you that if you had to, if it was only in-person coaching or if you did anything remotely like that. That's great.
Yeah, we have various packages, but actually our remote coaching is our most popular. But there's things like Skype and stuff, which is very good for those. We have a guy over in France at the moment where we Skype. We have a couple of riders who are abroad in doing World Cup events at the moment. And yeah, Skype is really good. We can do a lot of Skyping in hotel foyers at the moment.
It's awesome. It's made the world a much smaller place, hasn't it?
Mm.
Fantastic.
Definitely. Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Brian, it's been really awesome talking to you. Very inspirational, what you're doing, not only, you know, your career, but how you're helping other people just find cycling and enjoy that sport. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we sign off?
I think fitness is very important. You know, in the UK, there's quite a problem with obesity and stuff. And I think fitness is really, really important for people and to get the quality of life and stuff, really. And as I said, cycling is a great venture for that. It doesn't really cost that much money. You can buy, you know, you can buy a bike for £10 or thousands of pounds. But just for people to get out on their bikes, enjoy it, see the countryside, but more importantly, is ride safely.
Yeah, it's great when you can find a fitness activity that's just a lot of fun to do,
definitely.
Cycling.
Yeah. And here where I live in North Nottinghamshire, where we live near Sherwood Forest and stuff, and yeah, it doesn't matter if you're on the road or going around the trails around Sherwood Forest, you know, it's a great activity. And the great thing about it, you can mix it up and have, you know, do off-road, on-road. We've got some great velodromes here in the UK, same as in America. And yeah, just mix it up, get out there, meet people. And as I said, it's such a sociable sport. You know, I've known people who've actually got married through it because they met somebody out on the road. Next thing they know, there's love there.
That's awesome. That's great. Well, Brian, thank you again. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Brian is doing some great inspirational work, and if you're interested in finding out more about Brian or getting some in-person or virtual coaching, I'll have links to all his sites in the show notes for this episode. Stop by outsidehealthandfitness.com/128 for the notes and the links I just mentioned. And while you're there, click on any of the icons to easily subscribe to the show or leave a review, and be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter to stay up to date with more information on getting outside and in shape. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. I hope you got something of value from the show today that helps you get outside and in shape. For more on taking your health and fitness outside, visit outsidehealthandfitness.com and subscribe to the show. Until next time, I'll see you outside.